Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Welcome, this is Way of the Dreamer, the show with Robert Noss, where we affirm the power of dreaming, coincidence, and imagination. And imagine this, we have a really fun guest today. The show is going to be as fun as a fountain of ferrets. That's the line I read when I opened her book, Tuning In at Random, which is the way I always open books. It becomes a kind of bibliomancy, what is looking at you on the page. Her name is Sandy Miranda. She's been very well known in radio, particularly in California and in Hawaii, for over 30 years. She's written a life story, which is about many things. Let me just talk a little bit more before I bring you on. Because I opened your book in the middle, I found myself in what you described as the slap bang in the midst of the invention of the modern era. That's what you said. I was with you at Apple Computer. In the good days and on the bad days, when Steve Jobs walked in and sacked 100 people, including you, as bozos. But then you got such a way back. And then I'm following you through, you know, your fascination with music and your ability to bring musicians and new kinds of music to the airwaves and your ability to find wonderful guests, particularly to speak about women finding their voice and women finding their spirituality. So here is Sandy Miranda, and her book is Tuning In, subtitled A Memoir of Transformation Through the Magic of Radio. Welcome.
Oh, thank you, Robert. I'm absolutely thrilled to be on your podcast. This is a wonderful
meeting. Well, because I started your book in the middle, I only recently went back and read the early chapters, which are somewhat harrowing. They're not always as much fun as a fountain of ferrets. But they put it all in a context of human experience, which will speak to many people. And one of the things that I noticed, because your memories are so vivid, is you note the importance of smell, of the olfactory sense in calling up memories. You talk about the smell of a redwood. You talk about the smell of new-mown grass. You talk about the smell of orange blossom. And I'm reading, as I read you, a sort of an American take on Proust, who famously was able to pull up memories of his early life by the smell of a certain kind of biscuit, a petite madeleine dipped in tea infused with lime flour. So talk to us a little bit about memory. Talk to us a little bit about your roots, where you come from. It's a harrowing story, as I say, at some points. I mean, barefoot and pregnant in your teens. Talk to us a little bit about where it all begins.
Well, this is really interesting because you're the first person that's ever said anything about the smell, and I've never even thought about it myself. So that's interesting to me, and I have to – but I am really – smells really do affect me, like the smell of what my grandmother used to make when I was a kid. But I've actually never thought of it from that aspect before. But some people have said to me, how in the world did you remember all this stuff? Because, some of this stuff happened 70 years ago, but it's because I became a photographer when I was 8 years old, and I have I have photographs of my whole life and everything I've done. And I took 6 months about 10 years ago and pared them all down to about six little, boxes, shoebox size, just the main pictures. But those pictures, I'm very visual also. I think smell, I'm going to have to really think about that. Yeah, but also I'm extremely visual. because I'm a little bit dyslexic, and I think maybe that comes with the territory. I learn by seeing things. And so the photographs, I just went through and looked at all my photographs, and it just all snapped back into my mind, you know? And I found out that not everybody does that.
I'm highly visual too, and I think that my own ability to speak and to write has a great deal to do with being able to see it in my mind. In my mind more than through the photographs, although of course in my case I do a lot of drawing and painting. I mean, quick stuff, nothing remotely professional, but I like to draw and paint my dreams and my experiences and come at it that way. But I'm thinking about, you know, more of the scenes from your early childhood, because I read it very recently. As I said, I started your book in the middle and didn't remember to go back to the beginning actually until this morning.
Yeah.
And now I'm reading you about your early life, and there's the radio on the bedside table in Palo Alto where you're an only child, and there's the smell of new mown grass blowing through the Dutch door. So whether you understood that this is important or not, it crops up again and again in your narrative. And there you are listening to your radio at different times, and there's an Ovaltine commercial, and there's a magic ring in an Ovaltine box, and you've got to have the magic ring. I mean, this is all good stuff, fun stuff. But I'm going to hit you really hard now in a friendly way, because I got very interested when I read some ways into your narrative about how you set up a Women in Spirituality series on the radio, Women, Spirituality, and Peace, or Women, Spirit, and Peace, I think it was called, with all sorts of wonderful people, some of whom I know personally. You had Louisa Teach to start off with. I think Joan Marlowe was part of that series, wasn't she?
Yes, and we both know Joan, but I realize you asked me about the early stuff, and I'm going to go back and just say a little bit about that, because I didn't answer your question.
Well, hold on. We'll cycle back.
But okay.
I have abruptly shifted you, and I said I'm going to hit you, and I'm really going to hit you, because when you write about your radio show, this particular series, which was great stuff, in which we had some mutual friends, you said that you told your guests there are going to be three questions. And they might not answer them directly, and they might not be put that way directly, but there are three questions, which are you say in your book, which are going to be the substance of one-hour conversations. So I am now, Sandy Miranda, going to give you your three questions, one at a time, and I'm going to pause, and I'm going to see what you have to say about them now.
So they can okay.
Yeah, see, you've done this to yourself. And I'm doing it back to you. Let's have fun like a fountain of
okay.
All right, question one, quoting from your book.
Okay.
How do you see the divine feminine, and how does this affect your work? We're all waiting.
Oh, wow. You have really done it, haven't you? Okay, so for me, the divine feminine was something that I became aware of, I think, very early, because I had one of those Irish grandmothers that kind of saved my life and gave me incredible love, and she was the great mother, and I realized that later. But I studied with Marion Woodman for a long time, and she talked to the great Jungian, and she talked about the divine feminine a lot, and I became very tuned into that with Marion, and sitting with her for weeks at a time at Esalen, and she actually really opened my eyes with her stories about the great, her experiences with the divine feminine, and that really opened a door for me. I see it as this incredible cosmic love, that, in a way, I don't see it as a male or female. I see it as kind of a huge love thing that surrounds everything. But we call it the divine feminine. But really, it's the feminine in all of us. I don't know. You see, I've been an interviewer for 30 years, and this is the first time I've ever been interviewed, I think. So,
well,
I I'm going to have to learn.
You're not going to get away with that anymore. You are being interviewed. And this interviewer is going to say, that's a lovely response, but there's a follow-up question. Do you feel the divine feminine in the earth? Do you feel it in the landscape?
Absolutely. Well, since I was a little kid, I have understood that everything has a spirit, and I've always been very close to plants. I love plants. I'm a really devoted gardener. I can make things grow. I understand plants, and so trees and animals and streams and ocean and everything. But to me, it's all alive.
Right. Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, too, because I just want to give you a vignette from my life. You know Hawaii far more deeply than I will ever know it, but I've had some Hawaiian experiences, and you reading you on Hawaii made me recall what happened when I drove to the top of Haleakala on Maui by myself many years ago. Oh. It was a difficult patch in my life. I was by myself. I drove up. I'm just moving around the landscape, and although the volcano is dormant and the landscape is rather bare, as you know, with just these windborne plants, it feels so alive to me. It feels completely alive, and it feels feminine, despite the apparent, you know, austerity of the mountain. And I hear a beautiful voice, and there's this beautiful park ranger, Hawaiian girl, who works with the park rangers. You feel her, don't you? You feel her with every step. She said, I've never seen a man who is so attuned to the feminine energy of this place. And then she gave me some guidance from her tradition on Hawaiian mythology and so on. So it's just one of those moments. I have these moments as a mere man when I feel the life of the land. And not necessarily feminine, of course. I mean, it might be masculine. It might be neither. It might be something beyond it. But when you say divine feminine to me, because I'm not the most grounded or earth-based person you'll ever meet, sadly, that's been one of my struggles. I think about landscapes like that where I feel the divinity, in this case the goddess, in the land. All right, let's go back to your questions. You did quite well with number one. Let's see how you do with number two. Why have you taken the path you've taken in your life and work? That's a good one. What's your response to that?
This is very interesting that you're giving me these questions. Now I see how all my guests felt. I think I've taken the path I have because I had a very hard young life. I had a big brass military father who talked to me. Everything was a command, and it was horrible. And
he's a very oppressive figure in your book. But carry on.
Very bad news, and. At a very young age, I got a bicycle and I started going out into nature, and I had all these secret places under bridges at little creeks and places that I could go and just be with nature and be healed by that. And, you know, I had a few, some friends in the neighborhood, and we would go. And I was an only child, so I learned that the natural world was like my sibling. All the things, and the animals and the plants. So instead of brothers and sisters, I connected with all that at a very early age. And I loved rocks when I was little, and I was just interested in the natural world in every way. So I've taken the path I've taken because the more I didn't get the inspiration and guidance from parents, and so I went out and found it from other people, and I found people that I liked who could bring me along. And so I've taken the path of spending time with the most inspirational teachers I could find and learning from them. And then Marianne Woodman told me, I have a bunch of letters from her, and in the last letter she wrote me, she said, Sandy, learn everything you can and be everything, get prepared, because you will be called.
Right. Well, that's pretty good, too. And I must say, we have one or two things in common here. I'm also the child of a military family, though my father was a much, much nicer, gentler, and more generous person than your dad was by your account. But nonetheless, he was a military officer. And as with your family, my family were very WASPish in their attitude. So on my mother's side, they were Irish. They were acting very WASPish. I wasn't supposed to meet Jews or Catholics or have anything to do with the native population. So like you, in your account of making friends with Jews and Catholic kids and so on early on, I naturally gravitated to the people my parents didn't want me to be with. But including an Aboriginal kid who was about the only person I could safely talk to about dreams. But let's not lose the thread here, which you suggested with your by revealing these three questions that you asked your guests on your very influential and wonderful radio series. Your third question, Sandy, is, this is very timely, always has been very timely today, where do we go from here to create peace in ourselves, in our communities, and out in the world? So we're all eager to hear your response to that.
Well, personally, I can tell you personally that I have seen things on a certain level start to devolve in the early 80s. And I saw things starting to not work as well as they used to work just out in the mechanical world. Like, you know, if you mail a letter to somebody, it might not get there, that kind of stuff. And I just sort of have been aware for a long time that we may be in a very big transition here. But my feeling is, and I say this to people, is be at a personal level, do the best I can to be as loving and helpful to the situation out there. And, you know, just try and, I always say, well, if we're all going down for a new world, let's have as good a time as we can and stay as loving as we can, because that's the only thing that's going to help, I think. And also, by the way, do the work in the background.
Right. Well, that's very healthy. That's very good. I noticed that you remind us in one of your passages of quoting Hawaiian friends of what the Hawaiian friend for outsiders, for foreigners, means. Haole means those who can't breathe because they're not having enough sun. So you seem to be reflecting that again. One of your teachers and friends who I love, and we lost far too soon, was Angelus Arian, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And you quote her saying some very moving and important things in this book. And basically, you know, that fear is going to be around, but don't let it trash the house, for example, which is a great, great idea. Don't let your fear into the house to trash your house. And and you quote her as saying, I mean, this is very relevant, you and I are both getting late in midlife, not just entering it, but because many of our listeners are in midlife or in this second stage of life, let's quote this from Angelus Arian, as you report her in your memoir, Tuning In. Quote, I see midlife as a time of revisioning or redreaming or reflection. So thinking about the next 20 years and what we can contribute, which I think is very important, you know, perspective. It's not unique to what she says, but it's something that many of us think, particularly as, you know, the years advance and the calendar pages blow away. Here you are. You're the same age, more or less, or almost exactly the same age, actually. And here we are, you know, getting on a bit. How do you look at your midlife journey at this point, at let's say the second half of life as you've lived it so far? And what's been successful and what has been unsuccessful, if there's anything that you're dissatisfied with?
Well, I think my story is, on the surface, is about how I had a really rough start with not very much direction from my family, and how I was able to come out of that. And I've been a big, I've appreciated your work a lot, because you are one of the people who really inspired me to write a book and to start to draw and everything. But even before that, the surface story is about finding work and meeting a new family of friends and kind of making my own family from finding the right groups of people that were really kind of my tribe, or at least what I thought was my tribe, and eventually ending up in radio and being able to contribute. I did world music in my program, and I was interested in kind of teaching on the air, which is presenting world music of different cultures to encourage multicultural understanding. And now, mind you, this was starting in the late 80s when there wasn't as much consciousness about that as maybe there is now. But the idea of encouraging people to understand cross-culturally, and this is also something I got from Angelus, is the cross-cultural similarities we have in spirituality especially, and in cultural things but if you look at all the world religions, Joseph Campbell used to talk about that, there's all these things that we have in common, and some people are having kind of a narrow view, and they don't realize how much they have in common with this person from somewhere else that they might not know. So that was kind of the higher purpose of my show, besides playing great music. Yeah, leading people into that sort of a vision a little bit more. So that's the surface story. But then there's the mythos, which we can talk about.
All right, we're going to come back with Sandy Miranda to talk about her mythos. She understands cues and timing and radio. Radio people do. We're talking to Sandy Miranda. Her delightful memoir is called Tuning In. You're listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Mouse. We'll be back after the break.
Where can you find out about dreams and the dream world? MossDreams.com. At MossDreams.com, you can find out about Robert Moss, his work, and discover the way of the dreamer. Read numerous articles and essays on almost every facet of dreams. Find out Robert's class and workshop schedule. Read reviews and so much more. Visit MossDreams.com to find your way of the dreamer. That's MossDreams.com.
Robert Moss has a deep engagement with the dream world, and now you can take a crash course from this master of active dreaming at your own pace. That's right. You can get Robert's 8 exciting half-hour programs on a new DVD set called Way of the Dreamer. Share Robert's story as a dreamer and dream healer. This dynamic 3-DVD set can help teach you how to find your way through your dreams to realize your full potential. Don't wait to learn the practical dreamwork techniques that can help you understand how to attain better health, emotional stability, spiritual awareness, and more. Order Way of the Dreamer DVDs today from Amazon.com or MossDreams.com. That's MossDreams.com.
We're HealthyLife.net, reaching and helping a worldwide audience without hype, without shock, and without shenanigans.
Welcome back. This is Way of the Dream with Robert Moss. Do hop over to mossdreams.com. You'll see I'm leading a lot of online courses, and I'm actually leading a few in-person, in-the-round programs this year, including a couple at Mosswood Hall, a glorious magical retreat center near Seattle in August. So go take a look. Our delightful guest today is Sandy Miranda. She spent 30 years doing good stuff on radio, and her memoir is called Tuning In. She was just talking about, two aspects of life, let's say the surface life and then the mythos, the mythic life.
So, Sandy, you gave us a description, a very clear description of ascending from difficult beginnings without a real mentor and trying circumstances and all of that to success, finding jobs, carrying through even after being fired from Apple for a while. But you also hinted at the mythos that runs parallel to the everyday life, to the surface life. Talk to us a little bit now about how you understand your mythos, the mythic side of your life, your biggest story.
Yes, well, as you talk about in your new book, Growing Big Dreams, which I have to say is just spectacular. You know, I haven't, because I've just finished writing a book, I have a pile of books that I was dying to read that I had to wait, you know, and yours was right on the top. So last night I picked it up and I read the chapter. I picked a chapter in the middle, and because I've been to Mosswood, which is fabulous, and some other workshops of yours. And I read the chapter on Your Big Story is Hunting You, because I love to hear you talk. You really inspired me with talking about that. And, the real story underneath the underlying mythos that you also talk about beautifully is the story of how I found a deeper calling. How I found, it's kind of like finding meaning and why am I here? Why am I here and what am I supposed to be doing? You call it the shimmer, or you start to be able to see the magic. And this is a story of how that happened for me, in finding the right communities, in traveling in the multiverse with you and other people. And a lot of stuff happened in Esalen, and with a lot of great teachers. I realized when I was with people sometimes, the right, you know, people I really had a lot of synergy with, that I wasn't really seeing the outside of them. I was seeing kind of their essence, and that kept happening to me, where I'd be talking to somebody for an hour and I couldn't really tell you what they looked like, but I could tell you inside, you know. And I was starting to really tune in a different way, and that's why I called, that's the radio, the name Tuning In for the book, it's on the surface about radio, but it's really about learning a deeper way of tuning in.
And well, here we are. We're definitely literally on the same page, because I was reading your first chapters this morning, and you were reading Growing Big Dreams, my most recent book, last night, opening it at random. I wasn't opening at random this morning. I was trying to catch up. But the synchronicity for me is delightful, because I was just thinking this morning how to recast a manual for my dream teacher that I'm rewriting. I just thought, I think I'll call the preface to this chapter the shimmer effect, and you just brought the shimmer out. So you've just confirmed my, you know, the feelings about how to edit and shape something. And I'll tell you, Sandy, if you've written as much as I have, I'm not just talking about published books, I'm talking about all the millions of unpublished words. One of the big challenges sometimes is to decide what to use and what not to use, you know, what to select, what to throw out, what to put on one side. So thank you for just confirming through your own book dipping with my book last night how I should proceed in something I'm trying to get together.
Well, you know, I have an English degree, close to a master's in English, and another master's in philosophy, and I am very picky about the people I pay attention to. And I just started reading this book last night, and I was sitting here going, wow, this is an amazing book. I mean, I'm not just saying this because we're on together, but this is quite an incredible book, and I can't wait. Tonight I'm going to read it some more. But
excellent.
The shimmer, I love that you called it that. It's just exactly right.
So let's cleave to this phrase that you quoted. You quoted me quoting an Aboriginal saying from the First Peoples of my native country. Aborigines say, the big stories are hunting the right people to tell them.
I think that's true. And actually, some writers observe, I mean, Liz Gilbert wrote about this in her book, some writers discover that if they won't write and publish the story that's out, it'll go off to someone else because they're not doing what the story, which has its own identity in life, wants them to do. So when you think about your big story, of course, in a sense, it's all the way through your book, but if you were to try and encapsulate your story in mythos terms, in mythic terms, or if you were to compare it to a story from folklore or mythology or fairy tales, for example, what would you compare it to? Could you compare it to a story from, you know, literature or folk tales?
Well, it's kind of like the Golden Fleece, where you know you're looking for something, but you don't quite know what it is until you find it, and you go through all these travails and all these adventures and some disasters, and it's kind of, in a way, it could be like one of that, or it could, you know, it's also, I think it's kind of like, it's a quest. It's kind of like a quest, because at some point, I had this near-death experience in hiking in Hawaii on the Kalalau Trail, where it's an 11-mile trail that's hard on a good day, but a big storm came in and washed out the trail, and we were stuck in there for a week. No one came to rescue us. And then we had to walk out clinging to the edges of the cliff, you know, 11 miles in one day, and we got out. And after that, I realized I was done supporting other people doing things, and it was time for me to be creating. And that was a certain turn, and then there was another big turn when it was a continuing. I heard, this is funny, but I heard the new mayor of New York City, Eric Adams, say the other night, a bend in the road is not the end of the road. You just have to make the turn. And I thought that was great. So I had a lot of, like, things happen where it could have been a disaster, but I turned around and took it forward into something better. So
when you've had that experience, have you sometimes felt there was a hidden hand? Have you sometimes felt that something was guiding you or helping you to turn around, avoid the greater disaster that lay ahead? Have you ever had that sense?
Absolutely. Although I hope there's no more greater disasters.
Well, this is one of many themes we're going to return to, you know, the sense of something. I dreamed last night that a guiding voice was telling me to follow a very zigzag path, so zigzag that at one point it's almost like turning a U-turn, but in the dream I followed the advice. We're talking to Sandy Miranda. Her book is Tuning In, subtitled A Memoir of Transformation Through the Magic of Radio. We'll be back more to share some more stories, maybe more stories about how the big story is hunting the right person to live it. This is Way of the Dream with Robert Noss.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you are interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
You're listening to HealthyLife.net, the radio network that brings positive talk with positive change to make your world a little better.
Listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Moss, do pop over to my website, mossdreams.com, and do go look for Sandy Miranda's new book, Tuning In. Now, Sandy Miranda mentioned the Golden Fleece as the kind of story that arouses her and that she identifies with. So I'm going to lay a story involving the Golden Fleece on Sandy. It's not really the exploration of that particular myth itself, though I've done a lot of work on that because I've been guided many times to develop that story. In fact, I've led a shamanic dream theater for a whole weekend, enacting, dramatizing scenes from the Golden Fleece, complete with Medea and her father and all of that. But here's the story I want to tell Sandy, because it's about how when you get close to a big story, a mythic story in your life, things begin to work differently. The synchronicity begins to explode. So I dreamed that I had written something like a Greek epic, something like the Argonautica, the story of the Golden Fleece. And I'm traveling to Boulder to do a workshop and appear at the Boulder Bookstore, a wonderful independent where I hope Sandy gets to speak. And on my trip, I find myself sitting next to, I've got a copy of the Argonautica, the story of the Golden Fleece, in my bag. And on the plane, there's a woman sitting next to me, a rather splendid older woman who talks just like me, sort of Anglo-Australian accent. And I say to her, you sound just like me. And she says, of course I do. I'm Helen of Troy. And I look at her, what kind of game is this? Well, she is making a double entendre. She's moved to Troy, New York, where I used to live, but she doesn't know that. So we're mythic, but at the same time, there's a synchronicity of two Aussies, rather Anglo-Australian Aussies, who've lived in the same small town in upscale New York. So this is a promising beginning. Now I'm in Boulder, still thinking about myths. I've also got the Odyssey in my bag. And I go to the desk at the bookstore, the Boulder bookstore, and the girl's name is Athena. So I say, who, by the way, put the talking plank in the Argo, in the ship that Jason and so sailing into the Golden Fleece. So I say to Athena, where's Odysseus? She says, oh, he works for the store, aging Odysseus. So they produce this handsome young man, muscled with long hair, who looks like, you know, someone from that time. His name is Odysseus. I say, oh, you made that up. You're in Boulder. No, my parents were on honeymoon in Greece. They named me Odysseus. Oh, great. So this goes on and on and on. I'm out. It sounds true. The next day to record Gaia. I'm at Gaia TV to record something. The receptionist is called Gaia. She has a serpent running down her arm. She brings me coffee. And then I'm in the interview room, and they say to me, Robert, what is it like to live at the center of the multidimensional universe, as you say you do? And I start telling this story of multiplying echoes, mythic echoes, Helen of Troy, Athena, Odysseus, Gaia. She says, wait, let's get Icarus in here. So they bring in a young studio, his name is Icarus. And I say, don't fly too close to the sun, Sonny. And he says, oh, no, they got that wrong. I dropped my fake wings because I didn't need them. I flew by myself. So we've got a kid in the studio revising the story of Icarus and Daedalus and the chariot and the sun to make it his own. That's the sort of thing that I find happens when we are living next to the power of a big story, Sandy. Oh,
that's incredible. If I didn't know it was true, it would be hard to believe. That's amazing.
When it's going on like that, and in my life it's often going on like that, even when I'm just sitting at home, because I've been basically homebound for 2 years despite all my earlier travels pre-pandemic. Even when I'm sitting home in multipliers like this through the way that books appear and disappear and the way that contacts are made and don't make, but I often feel, Sandy, as if behind the curtains of ordinary perception, greater powers, greater intelligences are watching and sometimes snickering and sometimes saying to each other, do you think that's enough? Shall we give them another one? Do you think we've done enough for now? Oh, go on, let's do another one. You know, that sort of thing. I think the relationship between dreaming, of which I do a lot, and noticing symbols and symbolic pop-ups and synchronicity in everyday life, which I also do a lot of, and I think you do too. I think relationship is this. In dreams or visions, we get out there. We travel beyond the body and brain and linear time. Through synchronicity, through these sort of symbolic pop-ups, we sometimes feel powers and intelligences of the deeper world pushing or poking through the veils to tickle us, to push us back, to bring us along, you know, like that. And it multiplies depending on what we're doing and what kind of passion and interest we're bringing to it.
You know, I believe that in every cell of my body, and I've always said, if I'm getting lots of synchronicity happening, I'm on the right path. And when it stops happening, I know I need to look at that and see how I've gotten off the path. And that's all. I've always thought that. And I have a really good synchronicity story for you, if you'd like to hear it.
Please.
When I started going to Esalen in the late 80s, and I was there one time. I was a big follower of Joseph Campbell. I studied his work in college in the early 70s and stuff. And so when Joseph Campbell passed away, I went to his wake at Esalen. There was about 35 of us there, and I was sitting in the lunchroom. We were just talking, and this woman next to me started to say something, and I recognized her voice, and it was Joan Marler. And I've been listening to her spirituality shows on KPFA for years, but I had never met her. And I said, I introduced myself, and she said, oh, it's nice to meet you, stuff. And then the lady across from us said, does anybody know anything about the myth of Inanna? And Joan and I started telling the story, and she would tell one piece, and then I would jump in and tell the next piece, and then she would tell the next piece, and then I would tell the next piece. And we looked at each other, and this blast of freezing air shot up from the floor between us. And she said, I think you'd better come to KPFA and get trained to do radio.
Beautiful.
It's the Inanna that got me on the radio.
Well, why not? But once again, I can confirm your synchronicity with mine. Last time I had dinner with Joan Marler at the French Garden, when she still had the restaurant, we had a conversation, three of us, Joan and I and another woman who was there, about Inanna. We talked about Inanna at the dinner table for an hour.
Unbelievable.
And people were talking about their different takes on it. And I spoke about a dream in which Mircea Eliade, the great Romanian mythographer, told me I needed to write the male version of the story of Inanna from Dumuzi's point of view. So this was our conversation. I made notes towards that, but it's along with the millions of words of things I haven't finished yet. But we had an hour on Inanna at Joan's table at the French Garden, Sandy.
I'm not surprised at all. that's amazing.
Joan Marler is another great former radio personality and great personality in general. But one of the things that Joan and I share, which you know about from Joan's point of view, is a great love of Maria Gimbutas and the Baltic tradition that she embodied. And I taught in Romania, in Lithuania, six or seven times. And to my astonishment, I found that that is one of my soul countries, and the landscape is alive to me. The landscape is the body of Jemina, the Baltic Earth goddess. So I didn't know Maria personally the way that Joan did, but we came together very closely in discussing Maria Gimbutas's take on the civilization of the goddess and her efforts to revive the understanding of what the divine feminine in old Europe was like. So. Point of conjunction.
Wow. I just went to Joan's defense. She just got her PhD doing work on that.
Yeah, great. All right, well, who knows where we'll go next. We've got one more eight-minute segment. We're having a wonderful time with Sandy Miranda. Her book is Tuning In. Go look for it. A memoir of transformation through the magic of radio. You're going to get wonderful stories about the early days of Vessel and the early days of Apple Computer, about global music, about Hawaii, and you'll be drawn to reflect more about what is your life calling right now? What are you doing in the world? Where are you going? You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Knopf.
For all your live or pre-recorded webcasting needs, come to earthchannel.com. Get your web-based message out to a select group or the whole world. It's easy. A pioneer in webcasting, earthchannel.com provides the best products and services to big corporations and government users. And now, this same technology is available to you. They have the best earthcasting coders, servers, and products to meet your technical needs. But wait, don't want to mess with technical stress? No problem. They'll do it for you. EarthChannel.com is your answer. You can use webcasting for lots of things, like advertising, marketing, customer support, training, and don't forget, web radio and TV. In fact, you're listening to a live Earthcast right now, so come to EarthChannel.com. Actualize your audio or video webcasting needs today. You can't beat the friendly service or the price. Call earthchannel.com at 800-849-8978. That's 800-849-8978.
Robert Moss has a collection of books, audio, video, and DVD products that will help you bring the creative and healing gift of dreams into your everyday life. Revitalize your work and relationships and journey to the furthest reaches of your imagination. These books are tools that everyone can use to begin or enhance active dreaming in their lives. Visit mossdreams.com. That's mossdreams.com. MOSSDREAMS.com.
Since ancient times, indigenous people from every culture have used their dreams to help interpret their lives, the world around them, and the future. Now you can tap into this indigenous wisdom with Robert Moss's workshops and classes, all designed to help you learn more about you and your connection to the dream world. If you are interested in finding out about how to host a class or workshop in your area, email Robert at robert@mossdreams.com. Or to find out about Robert's ongoing schedule of classes and workshops offered worldwide, visit his website, mossdreams.com.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
You're listening to Way of the Dreamer with Robert Moss and today Sandy Miranda. You can see we're both old radio hands. Actually, I was broadcasting for the BBC in my early 20s. And both of us, I think, learnt that if you're in radio, you better avoid dead air. That was the phrase that was like a curse in British radio when I was doing that. No dead air. Get on with it. Keep it moving. Sandy Miranda's website is sandymiranda.com, just the way that it sounds, sandymiranda.com, so you can find out more about her. I read more about her book there. And I'm not sure where we are at the moment, Sandy, but you have stories you haven't told yet that I bet you'd like to tell. So, as they say in Mohawk, which I had to learn because of my dreams, Skaronos, tell us a story, any story you like.
I like these kind of mystical things that happen, you know, those kind of stories. And I found that these stories, I've had a lot of experiences like that at Essel, and there's something very special about that place. And no matter how many times the management changes, the land has her way, and these things keep happening. And so one time I was down there, and I was doing a class called Continuum, which is a movement class, and it went for 5 days. And basically, they have you in there moving like seaweed and just flowing really slowly. And after about 3 days of this, I went to the leader and I said, you know, I've never dropped out of a workshop here. I've taken dozens, but I can't do this. I can't do it anymore. I can't do this one more second. And she, the leader, started weeping, and she said, I really want you to continue. Just give it another hour. So I said, okay. But it was driving me crazy. I couldn't keep being sweet seaweed, but there was some reason. And so I did it for another session, which was a couple of hours, and I walked out to the edge where the railing overlooks the cliffs and the Pacific Ocean. It was absolutely gorgeous. And I looked out into the distance, and these orbs were out there, and they started coming towards me. And it was like, whoa, what is this? And I think I'd been in such a deep meditative state. I saw these things, and they stayed around for a little while, and then they disappeared. And I always wondered what the heck that was. And I ran into Michael Murphy, one of the co-founders of Esalen in Mill Valley recently, and I said, Michael, I saw this. And he goes, oh, yeah, that's a thing there. Lots of people see them. And then I talked to this other guy that was there, and he goes, oh, yeah, you have to be in really deep, and then you see them. And I thought, what is that? So that's a mystery. That's a mystery story, but people see this stuff when they've been meditating there. So that's a mystery. Someday I'll find out what's going on there.
Well,
but
that's very interesting. I taught at Esalen off and on for 25 years. My connection.
That's the first time I met you. Yeah.
No, it's nowhere like nowhere the depth of your connection. I would basically go and do my workshop. We do unusual things, and I go away. I'm not an Esalen person in the depth and passion that you are. However, you should know that I often use that place where the creek meets the sea, where the fresh water meets the salt, as a jumping-off point for a journey to explore the other side of death. So we were doing shamanic journeying, which a whole group would be instructed to start off from that point where the fresh water at Esalen from the creek, from the ravine, meets the salt water and fly or travel across the sea to the island on the other side. And the results were again and again and again extraordinary. So I don't know whether that stirred up those orbs that you were seeing, but I can tell you that many people were very, very successful in making plausible and verifiable contact with the departed in the realms where they are living now by starting from that point. In Polynesian terms, it would be called the place of leaping. There is an actual site on the North Island of New Zealand, which the Maoris call in their language the place of leaping, where a freshwater creek meets the salt water. That's their preferred way, the preferred map for people entering the afterlife after death. Remember to go to the place of leaping and jump off. Well, at Esalen, it's Esalen after all. I would be drumming for people and telling them to jump off and carry on and bring back some new, fresh, first-hand information on current conditions that people are interested in on the other side of death, and it works.
So, that's really good. Yes, I remember doing that. That's a special place there, yeah. Well, you know, a Hawaiian elder, a serious family's been there for hundreds of years, Hawaiian elder, took me to a place in Maui, and he said the wind was blowing about 30 miles an hour. And he said, come here and step into this area here on this rock. And inside this circle about 5 feet across, there was no wind. And if you stepped outside of it, there was a strong, strong wind, like the kind that would blow your hair back. And he said, this is the jumping off place where the souls leave the earth. And it was the same kind of thing.
Interesting, isn't it? I mean, there really are magical spots, magical landscapes. And at the same time, in a sense, the door to the other world opens from wherever you are, in any moment. So on the one hand, there are magical places in this earth where things happen more easily or more potently, or where you feel, you know, there are thin places, as the Celts say, you can step through into the realm of fairy or other time quite easily. And yet, in a sense, in our lives, if we're open to it, if our consciousness is streaming enough, the door to the other world opens from exactly where you're sitting or standing or walking now. So
that's what I like about your work, Robert, because you can do it. You've taught, you know, you teach that you can do it from anywhere. It's, so that's a slight cultural difference, you know. But that's your work is so wonderful because I've learned that I can do it anywhere, and that's a powerful thing.
I must tell you that for the last 2 years since the pandemic came upon us, this has sustained me more than ever. I mean, prior to the pandemic, I was traveling 7 months out of 12, traveling to Europe 8 times a year alone, leading, you know, all these workshops, trainings. When I look at my past calendar, I don't know how I did it because I'd be home for 12 hours and then off again and do some live courses, you know, online in between. But I've been at home for 2 years, but the fact that, you know, for me, the inner life is so rich and is also an other life in the sense that I can travel as a dreamer without leaving home anytime I like, be as sociable as I like, that's been very sustaining. And I found that for many other people who aren't normally in the habit of being quite as much this way as I am, it's been sustaining too, you know. And and to notice also in terms of dreaming with our eyes open and our senses of that the world will speak to us in a manner of dreams, that we're surrounded by living symbols, that we're in the speaking land, everything is speaking, the dog is speaking, the child's chalk drawing in the street is speaking, the wind is speaking among the trees. Noticing things that way, wherever you are, is everyday magic.
Everyday magic. I mean, I speak cat, and I have a big old, like, a Maine Coon cat, and we totally communicate. She knows I tell her something, and she goes and does it, you know. I've always spoken cat. it's everyday magic.
I was moved when I read about the importance of your Maine Coon cat in getting you through in one passage in your life. I've always had both cats and dogs. I mean, I like both. I mean, in terms of natural connections, I'm a big cat who also likes dogs.
But yes,
I'm a big cat too. Yeah, so it's been very important to me to have, you know, both around. Dogs love you no matter what. With cats, that's not necessarily the case. So you're dealing with a different personality type. And it's always very interesting.
One of the things is still a goal of mine in life is to have a relationship with a dog. I had a honey in college who had 2 German Shepherds, and they used to sleep in the bed with us. And I love those dogs, but I've never had a dog of my own. And at some point, I don't know how to mix dogs and cats, or I would try it. I think you have to start when they're young, or I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, we've always had both, and I've never noticed any problem whatsoever. So, you know, it's probably not too late to try.
I'm going to do it.
And great. Well, that's a great success for this show. What a pleasure it is to be with you. We'll be back after the break basically to just say dream on and let the cats and the dogs coexist. We've been talking to Sandy Miranda. Her website is sandymiranda.com. Her book is Tuning In, and we'll be back after a short break. This is Way of the Dreamer with Robert Noss.
HealthyLife.net, where positive overcomes negative.
You've been listening to Way of the Dream with Robert Noss. Go get my new book, Growing Big Dreams. It just got a wonderful review from my guest, Sandy Miranda. And go take a look at her book, Tuning In. It is such fun and such a human story, and it does lead us to think about the larger calling of our own lives. Thank you so much for joining us today, Sandy.
It's been a real pleasure, Robert. I loved it.
Mahalo. All right, let's all dream on and may your best dreams come true, and may you remember them.